Hello, and welcome those who have just joined us. And last weekend I gave an all-day course on metta. And I thought it was very well. It was like an introduction to metta. And I'm wondering if there's anyone here who doesn't know what metta is or loving kindness meditation. Yeah, it looks like everyone does. Good. Okay. And one of the things I've brought from that day is I felt that metta for oneself, because you have to start with metta for oneself. Or loving kindness from oneself. But, Charlotte, are you saying that you don't have a metta? You don't know what metta is? Okay, or loving kindness. So, it's a traditional meditation practice that's old and established. It's old and established as much as the mindfulness of breathing, and but it aims to increase caring and warmth for the self and for other people. You know, until recent years, the common belief among science was that every person has a mood set point that doesn't change over their lifespan. And that explains why people who win the lottery or become paraplegic in an accident will, after some transitional time, in elation or depression, they return to their mood set point. There's always a relationship between mood set point and which side of an individual's prefrontal cortex is dominant. When the right prefrontal cortex is more active, there are higher rates of depression. When the left is more active, it's an individual overall mood is happier. But the neuroscientist Richard Davidson from the University of Wisconsin-Madison discovered that Tibetan monks who have decades of training in meditation and compassion have the highest left prefrontal cortex activation out of hundreds of people tested. The research question was obvious. Was this due to meditation practice or some other differences such as lifestyle? And to explore this, the team studied before and after brain images on participants. These people volunteered for an 8-week MBSR meditation class. And they demonstrated that meditation for 45 minutes every day for 8 weeks is sufficient to increase the left prefrontal cortex, and that these changes corresponded to mood improvements. Our mood set points can be altered. But this is something that mindfulness teachers can attest to. And metta, or compassion, mindfulness, loving kindness, as a regular practice, you can become happier over time. So, loving kindness helps us to have the intention to be better friends to ourselves and to others. As I said, one of the things that I came forward with was having metta for ourselves, which I thought is one of the most important things, because if you can't have loving kindness for yourself, you can't have it for others. And loving kindness just opens up your heart to the world as it is. It makes us to see the reality of life and how things are. You can go through the different levels of phrases that we say, because first we do it for ourselves. This is usually the order that it's done in. Then we'll do it for someone that we like, or someone who we care for, or a benefactor. Then we'll do it for somebody who's neutral, which is a little bit challenging, more challenging, because it's someone that we may not know, but we may see around, or we may not know very well. Of course, the most challenging is the next, is when doing loving kindness meditation or phrases for someone you have difficulty with. It could be someone, when you begin metta practice, you don't want to go to the person that you have the most problems with. But it could be somebody who you have some difficulties at work, or it could be a child that you've had problems with lately, or a parent, or and sometimes it could be yourself. So that is, I think, the most challenging. And then we do metta for the world, which is also challenging given the state of the world that we live in now, and saying phrases like, may everyone live in ease, may everyone have peace, may everyone have loving kindness, may everyone be happy. I want to read, I don't know if this month my mentor and teacher, Huth Tiwari, wrote in her monthly blog, she's been reading about, you know, we've been going through the paramis each month this year. And I'd like to read part of what she talked about on metta. In three ways to cultivate metta, cultivating loving kindness within ourselves. And the first way of cultivating metta is metta, or loving kindness, is your primary object. And this is considered a concentration practice. This type of cultivation of metta develops samadhi, or the absorption states, or the unification of your mind and your body. A concentration practice means that you select one object and you continuously return to that object. When we do the breath, we continuously return to the breath. But when we're doing metta, we continuously return to having the feelings coming from the heart, thinking about loving kindness and metta. So it's a concentration that's generally cultivated much better at a metta retreat. So the phrases like, may you be well, may you be well and strong, may you be healthy, may you have peace. These phrases become the object of meditation by continuously returning to those phrases. And the felt sense of sitting and or the image of the person or ourselves or the world. If you want to cultivate metta practice as your primary object, it's important to go on a metta retreat. I digress here. I was on a month-long retreat at Spirit Rock and this past February. And I'd never really had a concentrated metta practice. You know, just concentrating, doing metta for myself, saying the phrases over and over again, saying the phrases for someone that I loved or my family, etc. And I found that, and I practiced this, and I also practiced it with, particularly, well, I found easy for myself was in walking meditation. Doing walking meditation and metta at the same time was really helpful for me to understand and feel the benefits of metta, because when you're doing the concentrations or the phrases, you don't feel that anything is coming, and that's why anything is happening. I mean, and that's why, you know, we suggest that you maybe try a retreat. You can even try an in-home retreat, or now that we have this month of focusing on loving kindness, that you use this month well and try and cultivate as much practice of loving kindness as you possibly can. I also felt that there was, I saw how I changed. I felt better. I felt, and I said this during the weekend, I said, I remember that I slept much better and felt that the metta practice was even helping me to have better dreams and helping me to feel better. And one of my colleagues sent me, I don't know, you know, Takaki, he sent me that there is a sutta or a dialogue, a discourse from the Buddha, and he talked about the benefits of the metta. And he said mendicants, which is us, you can expect 11 benefits when the heart's release by love has been cultivated, developed, and practiced. Made a vehicle and a basis, kept up, consolidated, and properly implemented. You sleep at ease. You wake happily. You don't have bad dreams. Humans love you. Non-humans love you. The deities protect you. You can't be harmed by fire, poison, or blade. Your mind quickly enters immersion. Your face is clear and bright. You don't feel lost when you die. If you don't penetrate any higher, you'll be reborn in the realm of divinity. And I was really surprised when he sent me this sutta, because it really is the truth. How not only cultivating loving kindness metta increases and opens up your heart to the suffering of the world, but it also affects your DNA, your health, your mind. And Tuari goes on. The second way of cultivating loving kindness metta is based on capacity. Thinking of metta as a capacity. It doesn't take long for a practitioner to realize how difficult meditation is, generally. It's difficult because meditation brings up the hindrances. The hindrances are five naturally arising mind states that challenge our resolve to focus on the object. And these hindrances are desire, aversion, sleepiness, restlessness, and doubt. So these five mind states push against our wholesome desire to awaken. or Dhammakanda. This pushing is difficult to experience in real time, but it is necessary to strengthen our resolve towards a steady, unified mind. We just went through resolve last month. We used resolve. The more we cultivate the capacity of metta, loving kindness, the more we have the ability to see the drawbacks of those hindrances. And the more we see the drawbacks of the hindrances, the less influence they have on our practice. And the more we are likely to abandon them entirely. This capacity building metta is usually cultivated on insight retreats where there's only one metta sitter a day. And we use the same practice as with concentration, but we are only using the phrases to soften or open the heart. Throughout the day, the main object of meditation is generally the breath, the sound, or the body. And the afternoon metta sit is primarily used to help soften our own temperament. This brings me to the third way of cultivating metta, and it doesn't involve the phrases at all. It's about cultivating our natural heartedness, our hearts, cultivating our natural tender heart. Experiencing a tender heart in this day and age takes courage. We're mostly scared of our hearts. We trust the mind and protect the heart. But this is actually backwards. We should trust the heart and protect the mind. And cultivating metta in this way requires that we first contemplate what loving kindness and metta means to us. As I said in the beginning, metta is translated as loving kindness. I began to realize that I had a problem with this word loving. When I let go of the word loving and considered metta as kindness or friendliness, I had no problem wanting to cultivate this way of being. The important part was that I connected with my own understanding of what it meant to experience metta. I found words like softening into or allowing and giving permission were closest to what I felt metta to be. The more I cultivated the felt sense of my own understanding, the less difficulty I had with metta. I cultivated what it meant to me to soften, allow, and give permission in all kinds of situations, and this helped me open up my heart mind naturally. Not out of some kind of force or of will trying to be a certain way or feel a certain way. Cultivating metta in this way is what enabled me to move through the world with kindness and friendliness while remaining in alignment with my practice no matter how different my actions appear to others. This month is about finding your authentic relationship with loving kindness metta. It's not about simply rehashing what you already know about loving kindness. This is about taking a month to actually consider, what does metta mean? What does metta mean to you? And how would you like to cultivate it in your life? And she ends with a deep bow. And I just thought that was such good advice. See the whole thing. I didn't read the beginning of it, but just go on. I believe it's on our website. And you might be able to find it there. So, metta practice, loving kindness practice, can be hard to discipline yourself to do it. Every day. But I encourage you to try your best, and particularly start with yourself. May I be well and strong. May I live in peace and ease. May I have a heart of compassion. May I be happy. And the phrases, if you open up your heart, the phrases will come to you naturally. They don't have to be those exact words. This weekend, I challenged the participants to come up with different lines for giving metta to the earth. And they were so wonderful. They came up with some wonderful different phrases. And it's easy to come up with the phrases if you concentrate and use a meditation as the beautiful one you had today, and keep the mindfulness around your heart. And of course, begin with yourself. Sometimes it's really hard for us to think about ourselves, to think good about ourselves, or that we deserve our love. But, you know, it's, the Buddha says, you know, if there's anybody, what does he say? He says, you yourself, as much as anybody in the entire universe, deserve your love and affection. And having loving kindness for yourself is a gateway to the opening of your heart. So, I think I was rambling today and talking. I didn't have much that was original. I was just thinking, I have metta for all of you. And perhaps we could say we should take a few moments to get comfortable in your seats. And we could do some loving kindness for ourselves again. And settle your mind and bring your mindfulness to your heart and the areas surrounding your heart. And try to feel it in this body you have. This body. And believe the love in your heart for yourself. May I be well and strong. May I be safe from all harm. May I live with ease and peace. May I be happy. And I want to end with a poem. This is called St. Francis and the Sow by Galway Connell. The bud stands for all things, even for those things that don't flower. For everything flowers from within of self-blessing, though sometimes it's necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness, to put a hand on its brow of the flower, and retell it in words and touch. It is lovely until it flowers again from within of self-blessing. As Saint Francis put his hands on the creased forehead of the sow and told her in words and in touch, blessings of the earth on the sow, and the sow began remembering all down her thick length from the earthen snout all the way through the fodder and slops to the spiritual curl of the tail, from the heart spininess spiked up from the spine down to the great broken heart, to the sheer blue milk and dreaminess spurting and shuddering from the 14 teats into the 14 mouths sucking and blowing beneath them, the long, perfect loveliness of the sound. So these are, the bud is which symbol of the beginning, and it symbolizes all the things, and it represents each living creature that is stunned before fulfillment. A bud may bloom or not, but it's still beautiful creation of nature, and humans tend to ignore the fact that it has the ability to bloom. And if living beings have stopped before its prime, it's possible that it lacks self-blessing. So the poet tells us that everything flowers from within, inspired by self-belief and self-love. We need to recognize our worth. In this way, we can reap fullness. Thank you. And now I'd like to open it to any reflections or comments. Well, of those of you, Monica.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, thank you so much for the talk. Like many of us, I could use a lot more loving kindness in my life, and especially learning to direct it to myself. And I was hoping you can share some more about what an experience of a prolonged retreat on loving kindness is, because like I remember reading this one book from, I think maybe it must have been Sharon Salzberg, she talks about loving kindness a lot, but you know, like she described how the retreat really kind of immersed her into this. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't have a frame of reference, but like, if you could share, like, what is it, you know, is it the repetition or, you know, like, how do you learn it at a longer, at a longer practice, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I believe at a, if you're at a long retreat that's focusing only on metta, then, of course, it depends on the teacher and what kind of setup they have. I would think that, you know, each day is spent with a Dharma talk around metta and loving kindness. And there's more of what, you know, I couldn't give, you know, what would happen in a week-long retreat, let's say, or even a weekend retreat here. But there will be a more foundation about, you know, how to practice it and how to think or what kinds of phrases that you may use, or, you know, that maybe it would spend, you know, a part of the, maybe a whole morning would be spent on the self, and then afternoon may be spent on a benefactor, or it could be that you just, you know, even usually there's a metta talk, you know, in mid-morning and either the in the evening. So you would have talks about what it would be like during the metta retreat. I hope that gives you some more. And please, you know, I hope, you know, Spirit Rock, there's many places where you can go. You can, yeah. Good luck, okay. Monica. Thank you.
Thanks.
Candace.
Thank you for the talk. I really find it very helpful to hear about the psychological benefits of metta. I mean, just, you know, last month we talked about resolve, and it really helps to know that it really does change you. It really, I know I've talked to you about how last weekend that one day of metta just stayed with me. I mean, it just had an effect for days afterwards. And yeah, so thank you for that reminder that there is even scientific proof that it really is a benefit to us. Not only does it feel good, it's feeling good for a reason.
Yes. Has anyone else had some experience with having a metta practice, or any questions? Jean. Hello, Jean.
Good morning, Nina. I really appreciated your gentle nature in encouraging us to do this practice. I find it difficult for myself oftentimes to start it, but I especially like the appeal to and think of it, as Tuari said, a concentration practice, to start it and do it and just stick with it, and the benefits will come. So I really appreciated your gentle nature about it, because it beckons me to actually respond with concentration. And I had this thing I wanted to share. I received this card some time ago. It's a birthday card, and it was from a friend who's old and dear, and the card says, when I open it up, "May you feel every bit as celebrated as you are." Mm-hmm. And that sounds like an encouragement to accept the self-metta, to realize that maybe I'm more celebrated than I give credit for. So that's an encouragement to me too. Thank you for your talk this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you. I think that's a great phrase to adopt for yourself. And one suggestion I can make is that you get an index card or, you know, a small card that you can have by your bedside or carry with you, and write down phrases for yourself that you can use not only for yourself but for others. Yeah, that's what I have. That's what I did. I wrote down my phrases that I had for myself, and I keep it with me all the time and try to remember to do those phrases every time I sit.
Thank you. Thank you for that suggestion.
Lindell. Hi, Lindell.
Okay, now I'm unmuted. I wanted to thank you both for the really lovely guided meditation and that wonderful talk. And it was so nice to hear that poem too. Beautiful poem. But I wanted to share that I went on a couple week long metta retreat where our focus was more on concentration. And one of the things I really noticed was that the mind became really, really sensitive to all those little nuances, you know, that when you were not quite with the metta and, you know, the little bit of wanting something for your dear one, or a little bit of aversion, and all those sort of near enemy kind of things. And hindrances, it became very, very sensitive to those, but yet was noticing them in this atmosphere of so much kindness. So there wasn't any of this self-blaming, just notice this is happening. Just notice this is happening. So that was really, really a beautiful experience to get a sense of the way that the awareness can be really infused with the metta.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you for letting us know about your experience. That's really good. And that, of course, that's, you know, when you're doing metta, as Tweri spoke a little bit to this, like, yes, you can, now you can see the hindrances. You can see when you get irritated, and cultivating your metta will just make you aware of that, and so that you don't get irritated. Yes. Judith. Hi, Judith.
Hi, Nina. I've been reading a lot about metta, and one thing that I've been thinking about lately is that part of the practice, obviously there's the meditation practice and everything, but part of the practice is just consciously being nice to people, you know? And it reminded me of when I first, 30 some years ago, I moved to Montreal from Bellingham, and I'm back in Bellingham now, but in Bellingham, I was very used to people just saying hi. You pass somebody, you don't know them, and everybody says hi and smiles, and it's just that kind of atmosphere. But when I moved to Montreal, big city, right, and people were more closed in, and as I walked down the street, I was so used to saying hi to people. When I pass them, I just say bonjour, and they would look at me like this. Oh my God, somebody spoke to me. And then they'd smile, and I became aware. It was like they just lit up because somebody had said hello, you know? And I was thinking about that the other day, just the effect of that simple exchange. And then, you know, maybe that person said bonjour to somebody else. I don't know. But.
Wow, that's beautiful. Reflection. Thank you. And I think that that's also is what Dwari means by building the capacity. You know, it's not just the phrases and repeating the phrases, but it's building your capacity to be in loving kindness all the time. Thank you. That's beautiful. Carol. Hello, Carol. Oh, you're on mute.
Really appreciated the meditation and your talk and your soothing voices, which really seem to exemplify loving kindness and coming from the heart. You mentioned doing metta while walking and how that was helpful. In our neighborhood, there is a wonderful red cedar tree that spreads all over, and hanging from it is an old-fashioned swing, you know, a rope swing with a board on it. And the gentleman who owns the house owns a tree, if you can own a tree, and the swing has given me permission to swing at it. So when we go on our walks, I will stop and swing on this and send metta out into the universe. And that's just a wonderful thing to do. And now I'm going to include the earth as well. I just wanted to mention that. So if anybody gets a chance to swing and do metta, it's just a wonderful feeling.
Oh, that's lovely.
I also feel like I'm five or six.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Really nice. Andy.
Thank you. Hi. Good morning. I really appreciated your talk today. I love the cadence of your talk, your voice. I wanted to kind of highlight what Tori said about, you know, oftentimes, especially in our culture, we trust and respect the mind over the heart. And it's just a good reminder it's actually the other way around, right? We should trust the heart a bit more than we do. And so I also wanted to say that even though I don't have a metta practice, that the month of October is a good excuse to, you know, focus on that. And, you know, I realize that, you know, when I'm in a negative state of mind or being critical of myself, I'm a lot harsher on those around me. And when I'm kinder to myself and, you know, a bit more patient and all of that, I'm much more, you know, accepting of others and kinder to others. So it's just a all around good reminder and a good practice to be kinder to ourselves, and that translates to being kinder to the world around us. So thank you. Thank you for your talk.
Well, thank you for your frankness. And I think we can all relate. I know that I can relate to that also, you know, and I'm not feeling good about myself and not very kind to others. So could not be. But I do urge you to write down some phrases for yourself, and so you can have them handy. And, yeah. Okay. Well, nice reflections from everyone. Thank you so much. Anyone else? I'm so glad you all are here. Julie, how are you?
Hi, thanks, Gina. Yeah, I'm doing really well. I just wanted to mention that I recently was introduced to metta without the phrases. And for me personally, I found that much more accessible. You know, I've tried metta practice with the phrases and coming up with my own phrases, and Usually it didn't last so long or stick so much. So, yeah, I was on my first retreat last week, well, the week before last. Today's 1 week since I came back, and the retreat was on getting in touch with the body, and they spent the first day on metta stuff. And I can relate to what you said about the walking. It was just really powerful. But they were not using, you know, the phrases so much. And I had been introduced to something prior to that. So it was already in my orbit a little bit, just focusing on the feeling of metta and not worrying so much about the phrases. And I also just want to say, Nina, that I really appreciate the focus on the self-compassion and the self-metta. For me, initially in my practice, that was the only metta I could do, because I knew I couldn't give metta out without doing some work on myself first. So, yeah, just thought maybe those reflections would be useful to somebody. And thank you again. Thank you both for a really, really lovely.
Thank you, Julie. I was wondering if you could give a little bit more detail on how you, I think that it's great for us to focus on the feeling and how do you get there?
So there's a practice you actually are, you start out calming, you know, grounding yourself with your body, and then you start out with the word, just the word metta. Because it's almost like a mantra, you know, it's almost like a chant. It just calms everything down and softens everything. And then the practice is directing it in six directions, you know, one at a time. So forward, to the right, to the back, to the left. And you spend, you know, a fair amount of time with each of those, and then up and then down. But the experience is just very much, so you're not really worrying so much about words. We all kind of know intuitively what it means. And then you can really focus on the felt sense of it. And so, yeah, there's also, you know, well, I was first introduced to it with the Clear Mountain, had some guests on, the Ajahn's had some guests on Wednesday night. And then somebody in the chat posted, there's some really nice recordings. It's like a 6-part recording series. I can't remember who recorded it, but it's at the Barry Center. You can find it there.
Thank you. That's helpful. It's always good to know different ways to get to what we need. Thank you. Hi, Liz.
Hi. it's interesting. I usually just do that focus meditation. But can you hear me? Okay. But a couple of years ago, just really, you mentioned work and like coworkers, and I was working with some people that were kind of just, I was having a difficult time with. And it was just so interesting because working with metta, and of course, you know, starting from myself, gave me the potential to spread caring and loving kindness forward towards those people I was having such a hard time with. And then it became like this moment of recognition of impermanence, because in a way, all of a sudden, 6 months later, I was like, holy smokes, this person now I'm actually excited to work with, or like I'm really glad I like didn't dive into those feelings of resentment and annoyance and hate, and instead just chose to view them with a sense of love and kindness, and chose to view them with a sense of empathy and equanimity, and it all tied in with metta. And I think it's kind of, although it's not my main form of practice, I know when I really sense that yucky feeling about the world, that it's just a nice thing to dive back into. Cool. Yeah. There's a sense on my experience with it.
That's good. Thank you. Thank you. It's always good to, for us to hear the benefits of metta and how it's real. It's like, you know, it's like non-tangible. You can't touch it, but you can feel it, and it does spread. And I think that's what, you know, the Buddha said, that, you know, the loving kindness is the practice amongst everything else, is the most important practice. And, it's good. So I think we're going to end here again. I'm going to end with another program, another poem by Rumi. It's called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond.